Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
All right, let's get right back into it here in the Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia, recapping the Buffalo Bills in the 2021 NFL Draft. We welcome in our Odyssey Sports sister station, WGR in Buffalo, Nate Geary, hopefully well-rested after a busy weekend. Nate, appreciate your time as always, but how are you?
I'm well. I got 36 holes in yesterday on Sunday. So rested, I guess, maybe isn't the word, but refreshed, I would say, is a good way to describe it.
Yeah, hopefully you didn't do a lot of talking on the golf course after all the time you put in.
Me?
On it.
Yeah. Come on. Yeah, I'm not a big talker on the course.
Nate, how did the Bills do in the draft, you think?
You know, I think overall, I think I put a grade to it as like a B minus. I think it was a good draft. I think there was a lot of, stop me if you've heard this before, but maybe some slight overreactions on Twitter during the draft. I know the Twitter factory tends to have the most nuanced and well thought out takes, but you know, I myself like to spend a couple of days, let the draft play out before, you know, anointing a team a failure after two or three rounds. But I know that's not what everybody else likes to do. And, I look at this draft and I think a lot of it had an eye towards the future, which I think becomes an important piece to building a consistent contender. I think this was the kind of season when you brought so many guys back like you did, bringing back Milano, bringing back Darrell Williams, and some of the other pieces that they were able to sort of retain, Feliciano, right? And you start to wonder, you know, where were the actual holes on the roster after free agency? And there just simply wasn't any. So you have a guy in Brandon Bean and team in the Bills strictly drafting best available players. And I think it's why you see some redundancy at picks. And, you know, you see a defensive end in back-to-back rounds in 1 and 2. You see an offensive tackle in back-to-back picks in the 3rd round and in the 5th round with Tommy Doyle and Spencer Brown. And I think the reason being is less about them having significant or notable needs at either of those positions and more so of, you know, an ability to build for the future, continue adding depth. It's been his, Brandon Bean's, sort of mantra since coming here in Buffalo. So I think they really kind of followed a similar path. And I would agree that this draft looked a lot different than Brandon Bean's first 3 drafts. But I would also argue the scenario where they are as a team right now is very different than where they are in Bean's first 3 years. So I think kind of knowing what we know about this team and what they need moving forward, I think they made a lot of picks that should help them solidify those positions for the future. And I think, you know, they took players at premier positions. So if you're going to draft best available, you might as well do it at positions you know that are constantly evolving and you constantly need players that are some of the most premier positions in the league.
Nate, with all that being said and what we know about this team as it stands right now, did they get good enough to overthrow a team like Kansas City?
I would actually agree with folks who look at this draft and say, I don't really think they helped themselves. They didn't move the needle for 2021 too much. And I would agree with that. I think Basham and Rousseau maybe offer you the most upside for the 2021 season. I think my buddy over at Buffalo Rumblings, Bruce Nolan, kind of put this really well. I think you can look at next year's defensive line starting numbers, like game day numbers, less about, you know, maybe bucketing or trying to say, hey, we're going to address 4 defensive ends on game day and 4 defensive tackles. And you may just say, we're going to draft 9 defensive linemen for that game, right? And maybe that means Gregory Rousseau is going to play some downs in the interior and then bump out to the edge or vice versa. So I think the numbers game on game day is going to be the most interesting thing, how that ultimately plays out. But I don't know that they really you know, move the needle all that much for the 2021 season, considering I don't think Rousseau or Basham start over, you know, Jerry Hughes or Mario Addison or Efi Obada. But I do think that they've created some more competition at that level, and I expect to see, you know, Rousseau and Basham maybe take some notable steps after the midway mark of the season. Maybe their impact becomes greater the closer we get to the playoffs. But I would argue I didn't really see a lot of instant movers. And frankly, guys, I don't think we were getting that at 30. You know, I just don't think you were getting a guy that was going to help you this year at the 30th overall pick. And I think Kansas City agrees with that, considering they moved out of the 31st pick. In order to try to help, they did what the Bills did last year, right? They move out, they get Orlando Brown the same way the Bills traded their first round pick last year to get Stephon Diggs. So I think, you know, I think teams, when you're picking in the high 20s and in the 30s, you realize that there's less of an opportunity to actually find immediate help and more of an opportunity to continue building your roster for the future.
Nate Geary, who is with Odyssey sister station WGR, our guest here in the sports bar. I'm all for more competition, you know, and for Rousseau coming in and Basham coming in. There are only so many roster spots, Nate. Is this in part a referendum on Epineza?
I think you can get to that point 100%. I also think, you know, I was talking with Sale about this, and I think we both agreed that we liked where Epineza was at the end of the season. It was very clear that I think the Bills' opinion of Epineza was that he lost too much weight. And I know they sort of had a number for him. They wanted him to cut down from the 270 that he was drafted at and play at around 255, 250. And I think he just thinned up too much. And a lot of that can be attributed to he wasn't in the facility. He was doing a lot of what the Bills had asked him to do on his own. So now that the facilities are opening and COVID regulations and protocols are sort of loosening up a bit, I think once he gets to the facility, can work with this group of coaches and within that weight room, I think they'll get him to a playing weight that they feel more comfortable with. But I think they like where Epineza is. I wonder how much different Epineza is than a Rousseau or a Basham. And I think I don't know that I want to say their picks of Basham and Rousseau maybe are an indictment of anyone as much as they were the best players available. I think they needed more depth behind the guys. And frankly, guys, I mean, after 2021, there aren't very – Epineza is one of your only guys under contract on the edge after the 2021 season. So we'll see ultimately where it goes in the future. But I don't know that I'm really willing to say one way or another that, you know, them drafting two defensive ends means anything for – Epineza, other than the fact that they knew they needed numbers at the position, and they certainly addressed that.
Nate, let's talk about these tackles that were drafted, because they're mountains of human beings. Yeah. They're just, you know, wagons of flesh. 6'8", 311 for Spencer Brown, 6'8", 320 for Tommy Doyle. You lose Nsekhe, so you needed somebody like that. Could Brown be the guy that maybe steps in and plays that swing tackle role as soon as this year?
That sounds about right to me. And the athletic, the RAS scores, the relative athletic scores of the two offensive linemen they drafted are just absolutely bananas. I mean, you see Spencer Brown basically putting together the most impressive RAS score for an offensive lineman ever. We're talking about one of the most athletic players for his size and weight. The guy ran a 4.87 40-yard dash and ran a quicker three-cone drill than Stephon Diggs. Mm. At 311 pounds and 6'8". So you do the math on that. I think he's a player that's really interesting, that has a really high ceiling. You know, I saw people maybe prognosticating that maybe you bump down Darrell Williams to guard and have him as your starting right tackle. I don't think I'm ready to get to that point yet. I think that's maybe pushing it. But I do like your thought of him fitting into the swing tackle role. I think that's absolutely right. I found it super interesting that Brandon Bean had mentioned with Tommy Doyle, that he could be a guy that bumps down to guard. I think that was really interesting of Bean to say. So we'll see kind of how those two play out. But yeah, I think Spencer Brown's probably the guy that helps you in that swing tackle role right away this year. And yeah, man, I mean, they're just absolute freaks of nature for their size and weight. And I think that was a theme that the Bills wanted to get a little bit more athletic across the offensive line. I think they believe if they can get more athletic, create some better foot speed amongst their offensive line. I think it's primary source A of why they moved on from Quentin Spain. I just don't believe he really provided them from the interior the athletic profile that they wanted in the run game. And I think that's why they kind of moved in the direction of Cody Ford and Ike Butker as guys with a little bit better athleticism that can kind of move and you know, pull and become just a little bit more of a quicker, fleeter of foot unit altogether on the front. So I like what they did at offensive line. I think they added two tackles that really, and potentially a guard in Doyle, that really could move the needle for this team in the future and really provide some much-needed athleticism to the position.
Pick 203, Stevenson, normally a six-round pick. You're like, okay, it's 50-50 at best if they make the roster, but who else would be a candidate to return kicks here on this team, Nate? Yeah. What are your thoughts on Stevenson?
Yeah, I think he immediately helps him in the return game, which I think was probably something that made him most valuable to the Bills and Brandon Bean at 203. The interesting part about the sixth round is obviously they trade back. They have three sixth-round picks. I thought they did pretty damn well in the sixth round altogether. That goes beyond just Stevenson. You look at Hamlin and you look at Wild Goose. I think those are two guys that will fight to be on this roster. Now, whether or not Stevenson can make it and beat out a guy like Isaiah McKenzie is going to be the question. But I think Stevenson, you know, got that raw speed. I think I heard in a story, too, that the weather at his pro day likely caused him to run a slightly slower time than what he thinks he's capable of. He thinks he can run in the low 4.3s, and I think he timed out in the low 4.4s. That extra tenth of a second, you'd be surprised on how much that can affect in a game day scenario. So, yeah, I think he'll be kind of inserted in there as the direct competitor to Isaiah McKenzie. And, you know, who ultimately returns both kickoffs and punt returns can be super interesting how that works out in the first couple weeks of camp. I'll be really kind of keeping an eye on who they have returning kicks. But I think Marquez Stevenson, if he can show the chops, not only in the return game, but that he can do everything Isaiah McKenzie can do at a cheaper and a rookie deal, I wouldn't be surprised if Isaiah McKenzie ends up being a surprise training camp cut.
Interesting. Nate Gary from WGR joining us in the sports bar, Danger and Battaglia on ESPN Rochester. Nate, not really a surprise, but today we got the fifth-year options extended for both Josh Allen and Tremaine Edmonds. Do you have any theories as to why Brandon Bean waited until basically up until the deadline? I mean, is this about keeping your options open through the draft weekend?
Yeah, I think so. I also think he wanted to have his attention. I think he mentioned this too during his press conference after one of the rounds, after one of the draft days, basically saying, you know, we kind of wanted to leave this decision until after the draft. We wanted 100% of our focus on the prospects, on the draft. And I think I'm good enough to buy that. I don't think I need to look through the tea leaves at all on that. I think mostly they wanted to focus on the draft. I think they did that. And I think there wasn't really much of a doubt that both guys were going to be extended and extended that fifth-year option. So I'm not surprised at all to hear either of them get it. And I'm not really super surprised that they waited this long. And Brandon Bean's a pretty calculated guy. If he's got a schedule, he's not going to veer off of that for, and I enjoyed, there was a question during the press conference saying, you know, any insight on maybe what you guys are going to do? And his response was basically like, yeah, I mean, there's no benefit of me telling you what we're going to do. You just have to wait for it. So I think more so they knew the deadline. They got it out before the deadline. And I don't think there was really ever any controversy about what the team was going to do with both of those guys.
Nate, when you look back at the draft, how much, if at all, would you say the gap closed in the AFC East? The Jets get a quarterback. The Patriots get a quarterback. Yeah. The Dolphins did some things. What are your thoughts on the competition in the division?
I liked both the Jets and Dolphins draft. I really liked the Liam Eichenberg pick in the second round for the Dolphins. I really, 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 really liked it. I'm slightly jealous of the early second round pick of the New York Jets getting Elijah Moore out of Ole Miss. I think that was a home run hit for them altogether. And I also, you know, I saw some negative feedback about their trade up to go after Elijah Vera Tucker in the first round. I was a big Vera Tucker fan. I thought he was a top 15. Top 17 picks. So I think they moved up to the area that they knew they had to get him. And frankly, they end up walking away with the best interior offensive line in this draft. So as much as people might say, hey, you don't move up, you don't trade up assets to draft an interior offensive lineman, they now have the left side with Mekhi Becton at left tackle and Vera Tucker at left guard to really kind of move into the future with. Now it's just a matter of addressing the right side, which I still think is not really particularly good. So I think the Jets really made out well. I'm not totally convinced on Zach Wilson. If you would have told me that he's more of a, you know, a church boy version of Drew Locke, I would probably believe you. I think he's more along the lines of a Drew Locke than he is of a Kyler Murray. But we will see it. And I don't mean to say that as a, like he's in sort of like a, he's got a type, but he kind of reminds me, I think if you're going to look at a comp for him, I think those are the two guys that you kind of look at. And I think he's far closer to a Drew Locke than he is to a Murray. So, I'm not saying that because he's really short. I know he's like 6'1 or whatever, but he looks small when he's playing. So that's kind of why I sort of always viewed him as like a Kyler Murray comp. But Yeah, we'll see how that works out. I mean, he could surprise me. He could end up being the best quarterback in the draft, but I do think the best quarterback in this draft in the long run will be Trey Lance. And then for the Dolphins, listen, guys, I mean, this is all about Tua. No matter, you can draft as many, you know, blue chip wide receivers. You can go out and get the Will Fullers. You can go out and, you know, draft tight ends and surround this guy as much as you want. I'm not totally sold on their co-offensive coordinator situation they've got going on. They don't have any experienced play callers. They got Eric Studisville, who's like their run game coordinator, who was with the Bills for a real long time. They move on from Chan Gailey, and if you ask Dolphins fans, they're super excited about the fact that they got rid of Chan Gailey. But if you're a Bills fan, you're looking at and saying, who did they replace Chan Gailey with? At least Chan Gailey has a record of having success as a play caller in the NFL. The guys they have now have no experience, and they need to surround, and I think they've done it. They've surrounded Tua with the talent. So they really eliminated the excuse from a personnel perspective, but I still really worry that there's not an NFL system that really fits Tua's game. They're going to really have to rely on yards after catch, and they got that with Waddle, and they have that potential with Will Fuller, but I have a lot of doubts as to whether or not Tua is going to mold into a legitimate NFL quarterback that's stretching the field. And if you're really relying on the short passing game, teams are going to buy on that quickly. They're going to force you to throw the ball over the top. And if Tua can't complete passes over the top, they're going to be in a world of trouble. So I think it's all about the quarterback in Miami, and I'm not sold that they've got the guy.
Nate, next up on the NFL schedule is the NFL schedule, the NFL calendar. It's next week. We get the schedule, and we've kind of been asking everybody as we anticipate what it's going to look like for the Buffalo Bills. Plant your flag. Who do you want the Bills to face week one? What's that scenario look like for you?
Yeah, you know, I would like to see a division rival. I know that's not maybe and I think that's been sort of the trend as the last couple of years. You end up opening a lot of games with the Jets. I think the Jets they played the Jets in the first 2 weeks of this year, like the last three or four seasons. So maybe not the Jets, but I'd be open to the Dolphins or the Patriots. And I also, anytime you can bring in, I like the idea of bringing a marquee matchup at home or on the road. I'd be good with either, but I kind of would like the Dolphins early in the season. I think there's a lot of confidence growing within that fan base, and I'd love for the Bills and Josh Allen to pick up where he's left off really his entire career against the Dolphins, which is just, you know, being in a position for the Dolphins to essentially have to refer to him as daddy, because they simply have no answers for Josh Allen over the course of his career. And they haven't done much defensively that tells me they have a game plan or the personnel to do what it takes to stop Josh Allen. So I think start the season off well by stomping out the Dolphins in prime time. I think that would leave me with a really good taste in my mouth. That's kind of my hope. But I think you're going to expect a lot of primetime games this season. A lot of late nights for me and the Bills radio network crew. But I'm looking forward to it. I think it's safe to say they're going to start the season with a marquee matchup. And I think it'll be interesting to see just how the league and the schedule makers view the Dolphins and the Jets to see how many how many primetime games those guys get and whether or not any of them will be against the Bills.
Last one for me, Nate, because I imagine the NFL schedule makers are like, okay, we have this week one. It's going to be Kansas City and Green Bay. Oh, they traded Aaron Rodgers. Yeah, they're going to like I can only imagine right now what they're thinking about all those scenarios. What's your take on Rodgers here? I mean, they really wouldn't consider moving him, would they?
Here's the thing. I think it's out of Green Bay's hands. I think that there is a lot to look at, and there's faults on both sides of this. I think the whole argument of Rodgers not being surrounded with good talent, I think it's way overblown. I think it's a lazy narrative. I think he's got Robert Tonyan, who ended up basically having a breakout season last year, led the league in touchdown catches for tight ends. I think he's a really top-notch player. I think Devontae Adams is one of the most slept on and one of the best number. I think he's right up there, third, fourth, fifth best receiver in all the league. Now, certainly, like Valdez Scantling and some of these other pieces that they have, Equanimeous St. Brown, like they're not really scaring anybody. And this whole story about Jake Kumerow being like the reason that he's real upset, I think I'm not really buying that either. Yeah. But I also think this is a team that has drafted defensive players in 10 of their last 11 drafts. And the only offensive player they got was Aaron Rodgers, a future replacement. This is a team now that's sort of making excuses, going out to Ian Rapoport and Albert Breer saying, hey guys, can you put it out there that we really tried hard. We tried hard to get wide. We wanted Justin Jefferson, but Minnesota moved in front of us and got him. That's just how it goes, and there's nothing we can do. So Eric Stokes was a bad pick, in my opinion. That's a team with one of the best secondaries in the league, starting with Jaire Alexander, who I think is one of the best young corners in all of football. man, you just move back. Draft Elijah Moore. Draft anything. Give him weapons. Don't give him ammunition, I guess is my point. And, you know, I look around the league right now. It seems to me, and I like the quote you heard from Adam Schefter and kind of your guys' sports update, which is, I think if Aaron Rodgers is really willing to retire, I think he'll win the leverage battle. But I think ultimately, is he in a better place if he goes to the Giants? I don't know. Is he a better place if he goes to Denver? Maybe. I think Denver represents the one situation I think he walks into with better weapons and a Super Bowl-ready defense, and I think a coaching staff, a veteran coaching staff, that could welcome Rodgers in and really allow him to thrive. The problem I have is this is a direct quote from Rodgers talking about the Matt LaFleur offense. It takes 2 years to really hit the ground running and start striding offensively. So you're going to go leave in the middle of the, like, maybe last 3 or 4 years of really high-level play to learn a new offense? I have real reservations about that. But I think at the end of the day, I do think Rodgers gets moved. I think it does end up being Denver. And I think you have one of the most interesting divisions in all of football in the AFC West and how that ultimately plays out. I'm not buying. I think Vegas often gets used as a leverage tool. I don't think anybody wants to go play for Vegas. I just think they're sort of used as a pawn in a lot of these conversations about, you know, the Russell Wilsons and the Aaron Rodgers. And I think mostly Las Vegas is sort of just is being used for their name. I don't really think any quarterback has any desire to go play there with Willie freaking Snead and Zay Jones as your, like, yeah, some of your primary pass-catching targets. And I think a vastly overrated Henry Ruggs. So I think Denver, I think Rodgers ends up leaving and finishing his career there. And I'd be surprised if he plays another down for Green Bay.
Nate, love the insight as always. Glad you made it through the weekend. And I'm sorry about the forecast here the next couple of days. I know they might keep you sidelined. Maybe you can find an indoor range or something.
Yeah, I'll figure it out. I'll work through the tiers and kind of figure it out from there. But yeah, no, The rain is not great for the forecast. One of our local meteorologists, I'm including pretty tightly with Pat Hammer here. So I get the insider information when I need to get it. So I think we'll be all right. I'm hoping the rain subsides and I can get back on the golf course real soon.
Nate, you're the best. Keep up the good work. Really appreciate your time today.
Thanks, fellas, as always.
You got it. There he is, Nate Geary from our Odyssey Sports sister station, WGR in Buffalo, breaking down this weekend's NFL draft, Buffalo Bills style. Some surprises. Surprises that they did what they did. And you know, when you look back at it, now you can say, all right, Brandon Bean, trying to predict what he's going to do in the draft is probably an exercise in futility. And in this instance, it really was. As we hate the cliche, but it really was, oh, we're going to take the best player available.
Listen, you can't complain if they're going to take linemen when you got to get big and you're facing the Kansas Cities and the Baltimores of the world. I don't have any problem with that, but you didn't fortify everything you needed to fortify. It is an interesting debate. A lot to get to here still in the show.
I'll drink to that. On the way next, we've got some takes on tap in the sports bar.
You bet we do. I've got one team. So coming out of the draft, it's very clear to me. If you like betting the NFL wins, the win totals, you know, the over-under, you know, what do they have? The Bills at 10.5. I think there's something easy to spot here. I'm going to tell you which team I think is an easy play. You can go make some money on this. And he brought up Jay Kumerow. I have my take on Green Bay.
Fantastic. Yeah. And by the way, we've got a reason for you to watch the Sabres tonight. I'll explain that, and I'll drink to that next. And I have a non-sports take today. Another observation from my journeys this morning. I'll explain. I'll drink to that. Some takes on tap, and time for your phone calls as well at 454-ESPN. You're in the sports bar. Danger and Battaglia on ESPN Rochester.
Odyssey has sports for every fan. Keep up with your favorite teams from across the country and get the inside scoop from experts. AUDACY. Odyssey.